Hello and welcome to the Mixed Media Podcast for Wednesday, October 21st. I'm Chris Wagner, culture critic for the Dallas Morning News. And I'm joined in the
Wagner.
Yeah, that's me, Wagner. And I'm joined in the studio by Christopher Wynn, deputy editor for FD.
Christopher.
FD is the style magazine, of course, of the Dallas Morning News. And also here, as always, Lauren Smart, arts and culture editor for the Dallas Observer.
Yes, yeah. Smart.
Good times. On today's program, we'll talk with writer, director, and UTD professor Thomas Riccio and actor Eddie Kahn about DP92, a new show from the Dallas-based experimental performance group Dead White Zombies. Next, the new trailer for Star Wars The Force Awakens showed up this week, as you may have heard. It has gobbled up the known universe, and pre-ticket sales, they're going like hotcakes, I say, like hotcakes. I'm setting records.
I need to buy mine.
Yes. Let's all go out and get our tickets right now. See you later. Is the intergalactic hoopla justified? Finally, in keeping with this episode's sci-fi theme, today is Back to the Future Day. That has a hashtag in front of it. Media everywhere are flashing back to that scene in 1989's Back to the Future Part 2, when Michael J. Fox arrives 30 years into the future in his DeLorean set to Wednesday, October 21st, 2015.
Dun, 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 dun.
And that's today.
I came in on my hoverboard today, by the way.
Awesome. So, Mr. Wynn, you are on vacation.
Yes, I'm back. I'm still, I went from an airplane to meetings and now the podcast, but I'm happy back, and I went to lovely New England, Boston and Cape Cod and down to Nantucket Island.
And you were telling us before the meeting that you're thinking about killing yourself.
It's been pretty bad. We basically went to press on an issue, you know, late the night before I left, and then I was on an airplane early the next morning. Got off on an airplane late last night and then have immediately been back into evenings and back in the grind. But I just want to say New England, as you all know, of course, beautiful, gorgeous, and cool. And I loved Nantucket Island in particular. If you go, I recommend a hotel that I stayed at called 21 Broad. It's on 21 Broad Street. It's an old Victorian mansion that they have renovated into a gorgeous, gorgeous now boutique hotel. And one of the nerdy things I did was go to the Whaling Museum, where I thought of our own Lauren Smart, because I learned that the hot new candle, or the hot candle back in the day, was the well oil candles.
Did you smell it?
I didn't. They didn't have one there that you could actually, you know,
what a shame.
Touch. I know.
That's a miss for that museum.
I know, but it was very interesting, and I learned that they were very valuable because they burned brighter and they were cleaner. They had no odor compared to the usual kind of animal fat candles that they had at the time.
Do they call them Ishmael?
No, they should have.
I feel like they were burning candles for different reasons than I burn candles.
Well, true. These weren't scented, but... anyway, I thought when candles came up, I immediately thought of our Lauren Smart.
Whale oil candles, Lauren Smart. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
I'm flattered.
We're glad you're back.
Thank you.
Especially having had to produce last week's show. I'm really glad you're back.
It sounded. I listened to it on the plane, by the way, on the plane ride back, and it was awesome. Great. You guys sounded amazing, and Mike Michelle did a great job guest hosting also.
Teamwork, man.
Yeah.
Teamwork. Let's get started. Thomas Riccio is an experimental theater maker. He has also directed more than 100 plays at American regional theaters off and off-Broadway. He is the founder of Dead White Zombies, a Dallas-based experimental performance and media group that utilizes ritual, indigenous, and immersion expressions. Next week, his show DP92, a quote-unquote metaphysical sci-fi thriller, debuts at the Beckley Ice House. Joining us in the discussion also is Dead White Zombies actor and contributor Eddie Kahn, a gentleman, welcome to Mixed Media.
Thanks.
So what is this play about, this DP92?
It's inspired by 1950s sci-fi movies, which I'm very enamored with and grew up with. And essentially, it's some dystopic, unidentified dystopic institution that the audience walks into. Each person is given an identity, a numerical identity, and they're taken through as potential inhabitants of this institution. And what they do is experience various experiments and expose to various documentations. What happens in the course of events is that one of the inmates has somehow disappeared and vanished. And so we discover that she has accessed the mollusk brain, As you know, the mollusk is the life on Earth's first complex organism, and it's basically we evolved from the mollusk. So she had found a pathway back to the mollusk brain. So what happens is people start turning into mollusk.
So 50 sci-fi, we're talking like Day the Earth Stood Still.
Sounds like the corporate workplace.
Forbidden Planet.
Yeah. And
oldies but goodies.
Yes.
So you've done a lot of immersive theater. Two years ago, you had TNB, which was in an old crack house in West Dallas. Last year, you did Karaoke Motel, which had different scenes in different sort of rooms of a hotel. What got you interested in using immersion as a theater technique?
The moment I can remember precisely, I was in Burkina Faso because I work a lot in Africa, and I was watching this 3-day ritual, and I was standing in this field, and in the distance I saw these group of mass performers coming, and then from another direction, another group, and then I realized I was all of a sudden, and there were people following them and participating with the ritual, and I realized that I'm in the middle of this narrative that's unfolding, and it's kind of unwieldy, but also captivating. And so how do I kind of bring that to my own culture? And then I realized that we're walking through increasingly heavily mediated environments, which are basically narrativized increasingly every day. And so how do you present that on the stage, or how do you present that in a framed environment of an aesthetic environment? So that's been the challenge of how to aestheticize what we basically, in the comment on what we experience every day, a narrativized reality, an immersed reality.
And it is very interactive. I saw TND as well, and you know, you really feel like you're walking through a crack house and watching all kinds of drama transpire. And I can't get the image of Justin Locklear as a crackhead out of my head ever since I saw that play. Hey, Justin, how you doing? Will this be similar to that? Will this be as interactive as, say, something like TNB?
It's more controlled, so we allow 30 people in, and then we divide them into groups of 10, and then we switch them around, and we judge who should be in which group. Oof. And we're not sure why.
This takes me back to elementary school.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, mediated narratives.
So kind of introverts be warned, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, we don't try to impress upon people to discomfort, because that kind of changes the whole vibe of the space. So people participate as they will, or interact as they will. We let them go, so we don't push them to it. So it won't be as intense emotionally as TNB, nor as confining. However, a theme is crowding, which is an issue I think facing the world today. The fact that we have more and more people, fewer resources. This is an issue that is kind of like not really, it's so big, can't be talked about in most narratives. So how do you deal with it? You deal with it sensorially and kind of in a totality. And so we deal with those issues as well.
Eddie, as an actor, is it weird at all to have people in your face as you're saying your lines and going through a performance?
Well, when I was invited by Thomas to check out the space first, I didn't have much traditional acting experience. I'm coming from the video world and advertising world. So,
and we should say, disclaimer, that your day job is with the Dallas Morning News, the DMN Media. artist and creative by night. So go ahead.
Team Bilo.
That's right.
Team Bilo. Team
Bilo
is a zombie now, yeah. So when he introduced me to the concept of immersive aspect of the theater and drama, it was just a light bulb in my head. And I filmed his last show, Bull Game, and I met him there. And I was wanting to go to TNB as well. I just couldn't because of engagements. so finally, when I saw Bull Game and I spoke to him after that, I expressed my interest, and I saw myself there somehow. So after talking to him, he invited me to Karaoke Motel, and we discussed the synapses within the space, and I checked out the space, and I can't explain the feeling that I had, this borderline nostalgic and sense of belonging somehow to the space. I immediately wanted to talk about what character, and I played a photographer at a Karaoke Motel. So to answer your question, traditional versus kind of non-traditional when people are coming at you. And my character was very interactive in terms of I was a photographer, so I'm interacting on a photography level. At the same time, I have a character, so I had multi layers developing. And as a performer, traditional versus non-traditional. In traditional, you know what you're doing, you know your parameters, you know how you can move people. But what I really started finding out within first few performances, that this is taking its own course. The performance takes its own course. Performance, immersive or interactive, whatever it became at that particular moment, somehow we shift roles from actors to spectators at the same time. So the performance evolves, and it has its own organic life, which is the most fascinating aspect of my life, what I'm doing besides anything else. So yeah, that's the most interesting aspect of immersive theater, where there is an unpredictability, but at the same time, there's so many areas to evolve within that. And I get to learn so many things. It's therapeutic in so many different ways. So there's a lot of aspects involved in immersive based acting and performance. And I'm afraid to go to traditional back because it's just I'm so comfortable in the immersive style. So.
And you were doing a great mollusk voice earlier.
Yeah, I was doing the mollusk voice. I'm like, I have to do this crazy, crazy 50s voice. Because I'm the mollusk from the deep and I'm going to be emerging.
Give us your clicking sound, which you're inspired by.
Oh, gross.
Oh, that's creepy.
Awesome. So this voice is going to be constantly around me, and I'm designing my costume too, in terms of interactive aspect of my costume. So there's certain features which will be motion based of audience and can trigger sounds or trigger lights.
So sort of the most famous example currently, anyway, of immersive theater, Sleep No More in New York City, which is a mashup of Macbeth and Rebecca, and. Yes, go through this four-story quote-unquote hotel wearing masks. And there's, like, I see two distinct differences in what y'all do versus what they're doing in New York, which is, one, you don't have us wear masks. Mm-hmm. The audience is, you can see the audience members' reactions. And two, the stories that you are writing, Thomas, are spiritual. They have these hugely spiritual elements. So I'm curious, twofold. One, why have you chosen to not mask us? And two, how do you develop the stories or the nonlinear narratives that you're building?
I debated mask. I think it's a distancing. And what happens as I call him Adan, you call him Eddie. But Eddie mentioned, at times you're not sure who the audience is and who's the performer. What happens in a few of our performances is you're watching people watch others. And it's like, and then everything becomes performed. And it kind of unifies everyone in this wonderful way. And we look at the performance itself as kind of an organism that is always kind of telling us and revealing itself to us. And we have to kind of listen. The space, the music, everything is kind of organic, which kind of moves beyond language and words and takes us in a unified way to another place. And that's ultimately where maybe the spirit comes in, this like non-religious spiritualism, which motivates me because I think we feel that, but a lot of us, like myself, are disenchanted with organized religions how they've been so modulated and how some of them have taken some very weird turns. But we still have this spiritual need of some sort of a larger connectivity. And so that's kind of like a drive behind the work as far as, you know, interpersonal way. As far as the writing and how I create them, usually if I can't sleep, I'll just kind of wake up from bed like 3 a.m. and I'll just start writing and I just like throw stuff down and then I kind of put it in a file and then I start looking at it and then it just starts coagulating into something. And there's an idea that it's kind of like the semi-conscious mind kind of forwarded and I listen to it. And sometimes I don't even recognize that I wrote it. It's kind of like a trance writing or something. So I'll do that for a few hours and go back to bed. And then 2 weeks later, I'll look at what I wrote and I go, oh, what's this?
Mollusk? What the hell?
Actually, we have that experience all the time. Oh, what's this I wrote?
Well, the thing is, but quickly mentioning what he just mentioned, it sounds really easy what he's doing, but in terms of my experience has been as a filmmaker and a director. I've directed before, and was involved in several processes when it comes to really telling a narrative from different sources. From video world, of course, a little different, and theater is completely different. When I see him working on a multi-platform, so starting from when I saw him when he came back from France, a strip from France, he's written it already. That itself, the writing is a complex, very complex structure in itself. Then talking to the actors, cinematography, production design, everything is layered in the mind. And I get to learn so much, as not just as an actor, as a future, whatever position I'm going to be taking in or creating something. It's just coordinating the actor. So we have this one person who's doing like him, doing this. It's like a clockwork. You see these so many pulleys working together in a way. This is just procreation of the whole thing, which nobody realizes, nobody sees. What we see is just the performance. The performance, how it took place, how it shapes, is a there's a big process. I try my best to document those moments when other filmmakers or other directors or producers or cinematographers can learn from techniques where it's just I haven't seen this calm of a director in my life. I've worked with a lot of directors. He's just the most calm person with so many moving parts. So it's like I get to learn a lot. It's not just as an actor, as just a visionary of what he's going through and what he's bringing to the table.
I had one little sidebar question for you, Thomas. You collaborated with somebody that surprised me and somebody that I've always been a little obsessed with, a guy named David Hansen. Mm-hmm. He is a local robotics engineer. He's one of the world's leading robotics engineer, android makers.
Conversation brilliant. Robotics, yeah.
And yes, he was in Plano for a long time, and I think recently he's relocated to Japan.
Oh, no, he's in Hong Kong.
Oh, Hong Kong.
Yeah.
I was surprised to see that you were a quote-unquote narrative engineer, and I wondered what in the world that means and what it is.
Yeah, actually, he wanted me to be there now working on some brain.
Working on some brains.
Dude, I'll get back with you. I'm working on some brains.
Working on a little brain.
Yeah. Well, call me in a week.
David's a former PhD student of mine, and we got to be friends. And this is like in 2005, 2006. Mm-hmm. And he was doing conversational robots, but it's like how you have to kind of write the script for it, the narrative. And so I wrote a character and a narrative. And then with motion capture, they started capturing my facial expressions. And so I actually became the actor. And so I wrote not only the narrative trees, but also the expressions that they may take when addressing that aspect of the tree. And so I kind of was actor, director, writer. And so that's a narrative engineer, basically, is mm-hmm. what you do. And now with AI, it starts propagating itself in ways that will test a robot. And, you know, after like putting in all this information and then variations of responses according to eye movement and who's talking, et cetera. And then they'll come up with something we didn't write, which is a wonderful, like...
And then the robots take over.
And then it's a beautiful moment. It's like, who wrote that, man? I didn't write that. It was great. But and it connected. For years, I was doing it as a friend because I was intrigued, but I was wondering why and how it really was a part of my overriding work and with ritual. And then I realized that, you know, since probably the beginning of human civilization, people have been talking to totems, and they've been imagining their hearing mm-hmm. voices. And people even today talk to totems and mm-hmm. ask for, you know, propitiations or prayers, you know, through those mediums. And now, and
we talk to Siri
because they access this the unseen, the invisible. So now we have a robot, and a robot is also accessing the invisible, meaning the mediated reality we have, the global, you know, reality we're now all a part of. And so now it's talking back. Mm. I have one anecdote, which I think is appropriate. Mm-hmm. Years ago, I had dinner with Timothy Leary. He was at the University of Alaska, where I used to teach, and he was there for a lecture.
That was an interesting meal.
Oh, it was. And I brought him to a friend of mine who had a restaurant. He closed the restaurant down and invited some friends. The guy who owned the restaurant, his name was Buzz. So you kind of know the connection there. So those guys, they're talking about the LSD that was great LSD and all that, from that era, and they're comparing notes. And then I go, hey, man, do you still do LSD? This is to Timothy Leary. He goes, no. I go, why not? He goes, World Wide Web, no longer isn't needed. he says, we're all on it. We're all on LSD. So when you think about it, you know, it's like they just found in a way, a non-biological way to kind of share.
That's fascinating.
DP 92 runs October 29th through November 22nd at the Ice House on North Beckley Avenue in Dallas. Tickets are $20 and available at deadwhitezombies.com. Are you guys on Twitter? Is there a Dead White Zombies Twitter account?
We have an Instagram page.
Okay.
And we have all the visual stories.
And telepathic told. Also.
And telepathic space.
Just tune in your mind.
Just tune
robotic.
In.
Robotic.
Exactly. that's exactly
tune what in, drop out.
World Wide Web. We'll be right back. Thank you very much. Mr. Riccio and Mr. Khan for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Guys, there's a new Star Wars trailer. It showed Monday night during the football game. Yeah.
Oh, Star Wars?
Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
Oh, my gosh.
The new batch of Star Wars. Fast approaching, opening, well, not that fast, December 18th. Let's listen to a little bit of that trailer.
Who are you?
I'm no one.
I was raised to do one thing. But I've got nothing to fight for.
Nothing will stand in our way. Finish what you started.
There are stories about what happened.
It's true. All of it.
Little taste of Star Wars. Force Awakens with elderly Han Solo and other favorite Star Wars characters. The Star Wars train is arriving. It is moving very fast. It is coming right for us. There is no way to avoid it.
It's
especially
too,
if you watch Monday Night Football.
It's really fast. It's a long time away.
Yeah, it's actually moving pretty slow.
Yes.
But it's moving with great
ride.
Force,
yes. Right.
If you will.
That's
see
a
what
great
I did?
Trailer. Yeah.
See what I did? Force.
Yeah, yeah, nice.
Okay, wait, awesome. So Wagner, should we care?
That's entirely up to you, Lauren Smart. I care. I was 7 years old. I waited in line for 2 hours with my parents to see Star Wars. That was, in fact, when I was 7 years old, and I'm now 44. I'm now 45. Wow, I'm getting old. The years just passed by. Yeah. So I care, but I am also in this position where I am like smack dab in the middle of the hype machine, and there is no hype machine. Like a Star Wars hype machine, and that part
the
of
original
it,
hype machine in a way.
That part of it makes hype machines make my stomach turn a little bit. I want to read this little bit that I found very funny. This is from Dave Schilling in Grantland, who is a big Star Wars fan. Grantland, of course, is the great sports and pop culture website. This is Dave Schilling talking about the fact that this opens in December. And the big trailer came out just this last week on Monday Night Football. 2 more months of this shit. By Christmas, I will have chewed my own hand off and will need a robo-hand like Luke Skywalker. I want to have that sucker installed ASAP because without one of those crane game claws attached to my body, I won't be able to buy more Star Wars toys. I'm so tense, I can't even sign away my life savings to Lucasfilm's licensing department because my arms won't stop trembling. My only hope for survival in these next 2 months is to nibble at the tasty scraps of this latest trailer. Join me, and together we shall rule the galaxy as Blogger and son.
Must buy toys.
Thank you.
Good one, Brian. Likewise, I remember I saw this as a little boy too, and lining. It was the first movie that people were lined up around the block to see, and just the excitement, the anticipation, and what a thrill ride. And I loved the movie, and of course I loved the toys.
You're cradling and fondling your Luke Skywalker
even more
figurine there.
I don't know about fondling, but I did bring him today. Coincidentally.
It's fondling.
Coincidentally, my mother did find in the back of a closet she was cleaning out my original Luke Skywalker action figure, late 1970s, I guess. He still has this little retractable orange lightsaber, saber. Chris, can I get a lightsaber sound effect?
Yeah, that wasn't very good. That was more like a Cars sound effect.
It was amazing. I had all the toys, and this was this is the first big event movie I can
Luke
think
down,
of.
Luke down.
That was so effectively merchandised, you know, where you had the action figures, the toys. I had the trash compactor, the Death Star station, the X-Wing fighters.
I had the Mos Eisley as the second straight week I've said this exact same thing.
Yeah.
I had the Mos Eisley Space Cantina.
Oh, nice.
With rotating musicians.
That was a little rarer also, I think.
So I want to know, we have someone in the room with us right now who's never seen a Star Wars movie.
And I commend you, sir.
Hard to believe.
You're my new hero.
Eddie, from the outside looking in, why do we look crazy?
Well, no, not really. I've been part of conversations where some people were really offended if I told them, like, I haven't seen Star Wars. Going through film school, and these guys were
I'm a little offended.
I saw that a little bit. I felt it a little bit from him. He's like, what? You haven't seen one Star Wars? So, well, I mean, 5 years ago, during the film school, we saw some of the frames we used to do, like experimental film or talking about George Lucas himself, because he's very specific about his licensing and his legalities. Nobody can mimic. Well, Star Trek, like the Trekkies, the people recreated stuff. Star Wars was one of our, George Lucas, I studied him in terms of how he really protects his territory or turf when it comes to his own designs and his
You just didn't watch his movies.
I just did. Right.
Nice action figures on the movie.
So, yeah. I mean, some people tell me start from the fourth. Some people tell me, no, you got to go with the integrity. I mean, you got to watch from the first. But most of the people tell me start from fourth. So, I don't know.
Basically, you can skip the second trilogy entirely. Watch the first three movies.
Completely agree.
See, there we go. Everybody's going to get
act like the next three never happened.
Completely agree.
And then just proceed from there.
I think that's a pretty common rule. Like, that's, I think most people tend to agree about that.
Like, Brian, are you, like, disagreeing with those movies? Were horrible.
Does anyone like Princess Amidala?
Those were bad movies.
Do you remember Natalie Portman who played that?
Jar Jar Binks.
With her top strategically ripped in half a la Britney Spears for no reason, just because, you know, they're juicing up ticket sales.
Well, there was a reason.
It had come to that.
It's the same reason that Princess Leia was in her sexy gold bikini when she's in front of Jabba the Hutt. It's the same reason. It just fit better then.
Well,
The Phantom Menace was about taxes, and it made taxes seem boring.
How's that? Rocked my world when you said that.
Taxes are boring.
Well, made it seem even more boring.
So, are we ready for this? Is it widely considered? I mean, J.J. Abrams, great director. I mean, I'm feeling good about this. In other words, I think this is going to be a great movie, a great result. Am I right to be optimistic?
I'm actually feeling good about it too. I just get so tired.
There's a warm glow.
Yes, exactly. My effervescence boils over. I'm just tired of the hype. Yeah. And to me, when we get this, you know, the internet breaks on a Monday night because they're showing the trailer 2 months before the movie comes out on Monday Night Football. I mean, that says as much about the culture we live in. Now, we live in the golden age of hype, and it is accentuated by the web. Those are the times we live in. That, I guess, is more what gives me pause than the actual movie, which I'm actually very excited to see.
Oh, I have a question. So J.J. Abrams, wasn't he involved with the bringing back of Star Trek?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that feel like he's playing both sides of the game?
He is. He's a mad genius bent on taking over the world.
Or will the movies feel vaguely similar? This would be my concern.
I think it's a lot of people's
concern.
It's
very formulaic.
Because the Trekkies and the Star Wars folks don't always get along. They kind of operate on two different sides of the fence.
Two universes.
Yes. Thank
exactly.
you very much. So if you start making one seem too much like the other, then there may be just a nerdgasm that destroys the world as we know it.
I think that's a new hashtag, nerdgasm.
Hashtag nerdgasm.
Yeah. Thomas, what was your experience with Star Wars? Were you a fan originally or never seen them, hate them, love them?
The first one I liked. The others, I thought narrative-wise, were pretty lame. I think it happened when Joe Campbell died. He kind of lost the the rigor of the ritual or the hero's quest, which is it's modeled after that, and he kind of established that in popular culture. Mm-hmm. And when he passed and Lucas didn't have him to lean on, I think he kind of lost the way and kind of got a lot of sidebars and didn't know where to go with it. So you need a good ritualist in there.
Right, exactly, case in point.
You're available, right?
You're
the
available.
Next one?
You should, definitely.
That's Thomas Riccio.
Right. So what did you guys think of the trailer? Did it succeed as a trailer?
I really liked the first trailer. That one gave me tingles because I was like, wow, this looks awesome. And it was nice and kind of to the point and just built the anticipation. This one didn't quite give me that same feeling. It's a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. They're showing a little bit more. But, you know, it's a trailer, for God's sake. We are basically, so the trailer hypes the movie, and then we all hype the hyping of the movie.
Right.
Which
it's
is just.
We're all employees of the media
there's,
cycle.
There's like this dog chasing its tail, right. Chasing another tail inside a riddle wrapped in enigma.
I liked the trailer because it was emotional. It gave me those kind of stirrings of the story and the plot. It was more than just explosions and cool sound effects. You know, the special effects are going to be more amazing than ever. It was great to see Carrie Fisher in there back as Princess Leia, and I read she was apparently contractually forced to lose like 40 to 50 pounds to play her character in the movie, which is
boo.
Yeah,
but there's also all this
sad,
there's also all this buzz about how great it is that they're letting her age and mm-hmm. and look
yeah
her
as soon
age.
As she loses 50 pounds
yeah.
and gets
right.
some Botox
right.
because gaining weight isn't part of aging
right.
at all.
Yeah,
of course not.
Anyway, I was excited. I mean, growing up, Princess Leia was an idol of mine. I mean, I was too young to have seen the Star Wars movies when they came out originally, but when I watched them growing up, I mean, I used to do my hair in the buns. I dressed up as her for Halloween.
Can you please share, find those photos?
I will get my mom to find those photos.
Cinnabon Lauren smart photos, please.
They're fantastic.
You actually have the perfect hair for that, actually.
I did. Yeah. It was really long, and I would wrap it around my ears. And, you know, none of my friends really knew Star Wars as well as me and my sisters. So
right.
It was like, you it's this great old movie, and I'm Princess. I always got to be Princess
Leia. Of course,
Leia, Although my parents would never let me wear the gold bikini for Halloween.
Oh, well, yeah.
That's the best. That's the best part.
Yeah.
Maybe now that I'm an adult.
Shame the bedpost. Yeah.
But I remember before the second trilogy came out, when they just redid the first trilogy and re-released it in theaters. That was in the 90s. Mm-hmm. The buzz was deafening then, and that was before the web really even took off.
Mm-hmm. Was that when they added the additional scenes
yes.
and cleaned things
yes,
up a little
because
bit?
we need Jabba the Hutt talking more on the surface of Tatooine.
I guess I was young. I was really young when those came out, but he was creepy.
Yeah, he was.
He was like this creepy, grotesque. I mean, you could kind of, I don't know. He's a perv. You could transfer him into like your
You don't even know what he's doing with Princess Leia and
just like, oh.
Right, that's right. Implications yeah. there with yeah, that tongue sticking out of his mouth. Anyway, again, I digress.
So yeah, we've now, this is the third, you know, there's so many cycles of hype. I mean, you had the hype when they re-released the original trilogy with the new footage, which, you know, was rather unfortunate as far as the new footage goes. Mm-hmm. There's the round of hype with each successive movie that came out in the second trilogy. And now we are resuscitating it, and it's louder than ever with this next group of movies. And that's just life. That's life in the entertainment biz.
It's working. I mean, that trailer has set all kinds of viewing records. You know, the websites were shut down with people trying to pre-order tickets. I mean, it's hype for a reason. It's working.
Star Wars The Force Awakens opens December 18th. You'll go see it, even if we tell you not to. So we'll just tell you to go see it.
Eddie, will
you
go see it?
Probably not.
Eddie Kahn needs to go see a Star Wars movie. We need
got a lot of catching up to do.
I got a lot of catching up.
Eddie Kahn Star Wars intervention is our next project. We'll be right back. Guys, happy Back to the Future Day.
Back to the Future Day, October, what is this, the
21st? 2015. This is the day that McFly travels to in Back to the Future 2. Just saw him outside, oogling, ogling.
Trying to get inside the morning news.
Yes. trying to get himself into the lobby of B-Lo.
He's trying to get that DeLorean past security at the front gate.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, dude. We don't let those on the lot.
Right.
So this apparently is a huge pop culture social media deal.
We've been waiting for it for 30 years.
Eagerly. That's right.
I've been anticipating this day even more than December 18th, which is when you may have heard the new Star Wars movie will open. Give me Back to the Future Day, any day of the week. Back to the Future 2, really good sequel, actually.
Which is unusual.
It is, and a little bit less so when you have somebody like Robert Zemeckis running the show. But the first two were both, I just thought, really, really entertaining movies.
Is there a third one?
There is, isn't there? Yeah, there is.
We've forgotten about it. Blocked it out.
I blocked it out. Did I see Back to the Future? I may have been on to doing other things like drugs by the time the third one came out.
You were hanging out with Timothy Leary.
I was going Back to the Future myself by then. Uh-huh. Good times. Christopher Wynn, thoughts on Back to the Future Day?
So the big moment, of course, in the scene, and actually we have a clip that we'll play.
When are we? We're descending toward Hill Valley, California. At 4:29 p.m. on Wednesday, October 21st, 2015.
The oceans are disappearing, and to save their home, the sharks must attack. Jaws 19.
So the oceans are disappearing.
Right.
You've got that one right.
Yeah.
For the record, I would totally pay to see Jaws 19.
I know. Well,
but
yeah.
Would you have seen the 18, like all of the
Sharknado might have made
it. Now we have Sharknado.
Well, that's just it. Sharknado is Jaws 19.
That's excellent, Lawrence.
That's it.
That's true.
I like that. Very cool. So let's look at some of the other things that
some of the predictions or some
movie
of the
predicted. This is from, thank you very much, Andrea Peterson of the Washington Post for writing this handy dandy list of stuff that Back to the Future 2 predicted. Hoverboards. Do we have hoverboards?
I saw someone on something that looked like a hoverboard yesterday.
I saw a Segway on the way to work.
I was going
to
say, Segway is
but
kind
no,
of
But no, now there's a Segway without handles. There are these boards that you can stand on that have wheels, right? But it's like a skateboard.
You just
kind
of lean and
roll. Yeah, you lean on it. Huh. So it's like a Segway without a handle, which looks like a hoverboard.
So we will give McFly partial credit.
Partial credit for the hoverboard. Ding, ding.
Video calls. I mean, that's so like a few years ago.
Yeah.
I think Brian Ellich is on one right now.
He's FaceTiming as we speak.
Yes. Skype, baby. Skype to your heart's content. So that's full credit for Mr. McFly. Flying cars.
You know, that's the big one. That's the one everybody wants and waiting for. I mean, ever since we have the Jetsons, we have Back to the Future. I guess we have self-driving.
Drones.
You know, automotive technology is coming. Google has their car that they're, driving around. That's true. Mm-hmm. We have drones.
That was next on the list, actually. We very much have drones. Smaller flying machines also made ample appearances in the movie. Drones are seen walking dogs and even assisting journalism. Thank you, drones. In reality, drones are taking off, if you'll pardon the pun, and media organizations are keen to explore how they could be used to assist news gathering operations.
I would love to see a drone try to walk my dog.
I think Lauren and I, we both signed up for that one.
Yeah, it'd be pulled all over the place. Good luck, drone.
Amazon is all about the drones.
Yeah, that's right.
I still haven't had a package delivered by a drone, though. Waiting for that, too.
Maybe it's what you're ordering.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Moving right along, newspapers. Not doing quite as well as they were in the 80s. That was a good period for newspapers.
Does QCAT count as the video glasses?
Ooh.
The old scanner?
Oh, yeah,
reader?
Video glasses. Well, like Google Glass
Cardboard.
Of a video glass, right?
Yeah, completely.
It's funny you should say that because in this article, McFly's rude future kids ignore everyone at the dinner table engrossed in their video glasses.
Maybe the most accurate.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And in the real future, we have glass holes too, thanks to Google Glass and the virtual reality revolution currently in progress.
But okay, in the movie, I've never seen this movie, but in the movie, is that these are predicted as negative things, right? These are sort of the futuristic hope we avoid them.
Shown as things that are happening.
The hoverboard's pretty badass.
The hoverboard's great, but the video
glasses,
it sounds like if the kids are doing it at the dinner table, like that's exactly what's happening now and is negative, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's tuning out reality to an extent. It's the culture of distraction.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what it's getting at. So, yeah, I mean, certainly we're umbilically attached to our smartphones in a way that anybody, in this future world would be attached to their video glasses. So, and the Chicago Cubs, alas, we thought maybe this could be the year. They made it to the National League Championship Series, but they are down 3-0 to the New York Mets. So this likely, unless there is a 2004 Red Sox like comeback, nobody knows what I'm talking about except Brian Elledge, who's nodding his head. That's not going to happen this year.
I'm sorry. What sport is this?
This is the sport of baseball.
Is this hockey?
Christopher Wynn, the Chicago Cubs, who haven't won a World Series in a long time.
1908.
Thank you.
Good, Thomas.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mr. Riccio definitely knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, here. Impressed.
Are you from Chicago?
I've lived there, yeah.
All right.
And in fact, a few blocks from Wrigley.
Oh, wow. Did you go to a lot of games?
Yeah. I was a bleacher bum.
Oh, wow. I would love to go to Wrigley someday.
And Thomas, you were saying earlier you went to the Back to the Future. Was it the Disney?
No, it was Universal Studio, like their backlot tour. And they had, it's not really a ride. You kind of, people sat there and then they invited people up, volunteers. So I volunteered, of course.
Of course.
They put me on some ledge that in front of a faux square clock, you know, a town square clock. Mm-hmm. And I had to put the lab coat on, the crazy hair of the scientist, and then put the wires together. And then I disappeared, right? And people like cheered, you know, and then I came out. It's like,
nice.
So you were part of, you were an immersive part.
Yeah,
of
yeah.
The,
it's always immersive with you.
It's always immersive.
Always immersive.
And then you saw your career flash in front of you.
And so in my neighborhood in Cleveland was the DeLorean dealership.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, how funny. Yeah,
so he had a Cadillac, and that's where he did his thing. And it's near an Italian-American neighborhood where I grew up, and he was a part of that neighborhood. And he had a reputation for being a car dealer.
Wow. Wow.
And we should also, since we're talking about the DeLorean, we should circle back to Ernie Cline,
yes,
who we had on in a previous mixed media episode, the author of Ready Player One. In Armada, who customized his own Back to the Future DeLorean, which he says actually runs okay sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we should note, I didn't get a chance to explain in that episode, that there is American Express did a series of gold-plated DeLoreans, special edition. I'm not sure what that was.
That was awesome.
We're going to roll with it.
More of that.
Yeah, more of that future technology. And one of them, a guy in a small town in Texas, and I can't remember now the name of the town, but he bought one of the Amex gold-plated DeLoreans, brought it in on a flatbed, and he set it on display in the lobby of the main bank downtown, where it sat for 30 years. And I think until fairly recently, he died, I believe, and they sold the car. But that was in Texas all those years.
It all comes back to Texas.
It all comes back to Texas. Yeah. So they're doing the special edition DVD and Blu-ray.
Yeah, I got them yesterday, which makes me want to watch the movies again, actually.
What's special about them?
They're special, man. You don't even want
to. No, I mean, like, are they, like, special?
They're so special.
Because it's October 2015.
I can't even tell you how special they are because I haven't opened it yet.
Okay.
But they're Blu-ray technology and stuff.
I still don't understand why Blu-ray is special.
Because it looks really cool.
It does look better.
And it sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
And they're blue, except they're not. Back to the Future Day. That
it's
is today.
It's been pretty exciting, yeah. Go get your special
edition.
I've seen
a lot
DVD.
Of people walking around in the t-shirts downtown. Yeah. It's
have you really?
Yeah, really. Wow. On my way over here, there were people roaming the streets in Back to the Future t-shirts.
Were they being followed by the drones?
We'll be right back. Thomas, me, I'll be back. Let's move on to our touts. This is the portion of our show where each of us recommends one thing we are reading, watching, clicking on, or listening to, or just plain obsessed with. I think I added an or in that sentence where it didn't belong. I will start off. I'm going to go with a movie from the 90s, which I've been thinking about because of the news this week of the scandal at Louisville with their basketball program, which apparently had access to basically prostitutes and strippers. For recruits.
Part of the incentive package.
Gross.
You know, these things happen. So, but Spike Lee was showing this kind of stuff way back in the late 90s with his movie He Got Game, starring Ray Allen, in which it's made pretty explicit that highly touted recruits are plied with naked women and other things that might make you want to go to that school. So I'm going to tout He Got Game. It's actually one of my favorite Spike Lee movies. It's a very kind of hard and, I think, appropriately cynical look at the whole college and high school sports machine. So if you're looking at this Louisville scandal and saying, oh my God, I can't believe this is going on. I think it's been going on for a long time.
It was like the SMU football
and Louisville got caught. So that's what happens. A school, a big program got caught. I don't think.
You got to have the right people organizing it to not.
Exactly. You got to have better promoters,
right.
Better managers. So yeah, He Got Game, one of the classic Spike Lee movies, available on that technology called Blu-ray.
Blu-ray.
Yeah,
Blu-ray.
It's cool. Lauren?
I saw Crimson Peak last night, the new
Guillermo
del Toro movie. It is really great. It is very scary. I described it to someone this morning as like a fucked up version of Rebecca, the Alfred Hitchcock movie, meets the Haunted Mansion. It kept me guessing. I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. So it kept me guessing, and it was scary and
very visual, very cool.
Very, very visual. And the lead character's really easy to cheer for. So Crimson Peak.
Oh, and it has the trademark amazing visual sense that Del Toro always brings.
Yeah.
Okay. I need to see it. I couldn't make the screening.
Yeah, the house that she ends up moving to with her new husband is this. It's very fascinating and beautiful and ugly, and you should see it.
Better than Pan's Labyrinth?
I liked it better.
Wow.
But that doesn't mean that it's better.
Okay.
See it on the big screen or go Blu-ray?
I think see it on the big screen.
Blu-ray.
I saw it at Alamo Drafthouse last night.
Watch it on your hoverboard.
I would see it on the big screen. Yeah. Full effect.
Cool.
Christopher.
All right. I have two touts. One, Rob Wilson, the Dallas designer that did our own mixed media logo.
Mixed Media's own Rob Wilson.
Yes. He famously did the logo for the international hit podcast Welcome to Nightville. And that has now become a novel that was released this month. And the cover of that was named by Paste Magazine as one of the 10 best book covers of October 2015. So congratulations, Rob Wilson.
Go,
it's a
Rob.
Good cover.
Yeah. And actually, Joseph and Jeffrey Craner is from Mesquite, Texas, actually. The creators of that podcast/book/sensation are coming to Richardson, Texas, to do a performance to talk about the book. That's on Wednesday, November 4th at 7 o'clock. So if you're into that, go definitely get a ticket and go see them.
There was actually a big story about the book version in the New York Times yesterday. Mm-hmm.
They're getting everything they do gets tons of press. Yeah, they're everywhere right now. My official tout, when I was traveling, when I wasn't listening to Mixed Media on the way back on the plane, I've been obsessed with the podcast called You Must Remember This.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really good. It's by Karina Longworth, former film critic, pop culture writer, and it's all about kind of the secret forgotten histories of Hollywood's first century. She does it all basically by herself, and it's amazing. But she did a 12-episode story cycle on Charles Manson's Hollywood.
I still haven't listened to that, but I hear it's amazing.
That's Village Voice Media's own Karina Longworth.
Yeah, exactly.
No longer.
Yeah, and now she's doing the podcast. It's engrossing. It's amazing. It's the web of Charles Manson's life, from Doris Day's son to Dennis Wilson, man.
Wilson basically bequeathed his house to Charles Manson because he got so sick of him. He's like, dude, just stay here.
Yeah.
I'll move.
Yeah, exactly. He actually moved somewhere else and just let Manson and the ladies and the family take over. It's fascinating. It's so well done. I really highly, highly recommend
it. What's the name again?
The podcast is called You Must Remember This, and it's a whole series. There's lots of different topics from, Marlon Brando to Madonna, but 12 episodes are devoted to Charles Manson's Hollywood. Definitely check it out.
Yeah. Cool. Thomas, what do you got?
I have two as well.
A twofer.
The first is I rediscovered Butoh. It's a Japanese style of acting and dance that originated in the late 40s and the 50s as a reaction to Hiroshima and Nagasaki atrocities. However, it has evolved to a point where now it reveals in gestural and expression form and voice what you're really thinking. So if I were doing a Butoh now, I'd probably go...
So that's how you feel about the podcast. Thanks.
That's what we'd be doing too.
Yeah. We're doing it on the inside right now.
So I kind of like the freedom of that. And the second is I recently bought, about 2 months ago, a theremin. and I've been wanting to buy a theremin. And I bought a nice one, right? And I bought also an echo delay pedal. And so I've just been playing, especially like 2 a.m. with my dog. It's just like,
Your neighbors are like, what is happening?
It's amazing. Right. It's amazing. Well, it just changes my whole life.
Will there be theremin used in the play?
Absolutely.
Awesome.
We should have brought in an audio sample.
Playing along to your Beach Boys songs at home.
Yeah, completely.
Your theremins. Yeah, I have a friend who has a theremin, and I heard it at a dinner party a few months ago, and it is. You can see why the old horror movie masters loved it so much. It's super eerie. Good vibrations. If you want to get mainstream theremin sampling the Beach Boys song, Good Vibrations, good place to go. You'll find links to some of the things we've talked about today on our show page at guidelive.com/podcasts. Drop us an email at mixedmedia@dallasnews.com or send us a tweet at mixedmediapod. Please subscribe to our show in iTunes and leave us a review. Just search for our name. Today's Mixed Media was engineered by Brian Elledge and produced by Christopher Wynn. We'll be back next Thursday with a new episode. Until then, for Christopher Wynn, Lauren Smart, Brian Elledge, Thomas Riccio, and Eddie Kahn, I am Chris Wagner, and we thank you for joining us.